Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around. Surface level success looks good on paper, but deep down, you know something's missing. Today, Brett Neaton helps us uncover what's holding us back from real fulfillment and how to align ambition with what truly matters. Welcome to part two with Brett Neaton, high performance coach, keynote speaker, and the author of Uncomfortable Either Way. In our first conversation, we talked about why discomfort is the secret to building confidence. And today, we're digging into how to stop settling, align your ambition, and pursue the kind of success that actually lights up. Brett, welcome back to the show. I'm so excited for this part two of our episode.
Thank you, Junaid. This is exciting, man. Let's dive in.
Now, Brett, you coach so many high performers. We talked a little bit about in episode one. What are some signs someone is stuck in surface level success?
The biggest thing that shocked me when coaching high performers was this realization that a lot of us are chasing the next thing, but we don't really know why. And a lot of it is a default of, well, if I'm at this position in my company, well, I might as well be shooting for the next promotion and shooting for the next promotion. And everybody looks in their bank account and they're like, well, I hope next year I have more money in that bank account. And, you know, we're always looking for this next level, which is excellent. And I want to kind of start off by saying nothing has changed my life in a positive way and helped me grow and helped me improve my standards like high performance. And that being said, there's also been times in my life where nothing has made me feel more inadequate and that I'm never going to be enough like high performance, because again, there's this endless pursuit of, well, I'm always looking for the next thing and I'm trying to do this next thing. And it was a couple of clients who I worked with for a little over a year who had these goals that they came to me for. And they're like, Brett, this is the goal. This is the thing I want after. I want accountability. I need help with brainstorming. We're going to go get it. And we spent a year trying to get this goal. And I remember with my one client, Sean, we achieved it sooner than he thought. He thought would be maybe a year and a half or 2 years to get there. We did it in about 7 months. And on Monday, he achieved this and it came with a big payout, and he got, you know, the big monetary reward, and he got the status, and he got the change in title and all this. And on Monday, he had more stress. He had more on his plate. He had a busier schedule. And he missed dinner with his family. What? And it took a couple of days for us, our conversations to kind of, you know, I was almost like, did I fail you? Like as a coach, should I have seen this coming, that all of a sudden it like didn't give him, it was so fleeting with what he accomplished because it was on to the next thing. And it was that realization and his ability to kind of explain how he was feeling to really shine the light on, we have to define success and know what it looks like. And after he accomplished this thing, we spent, you know, the next 6 months really trying to redefine what success looked like for him. Yeah. And it wasn't that he didn't want these things, but these things were actually starting to take away what he actually felt was successful for him. He wanted to be home for being home for dinner with his three kids and his wife. Yeah. That was success. And this success was taking away this opportunity at success. So we had to change what his schedule was going to look like. We had to change what his working hours were going to look like. We had to help him delegate. We had to help him like put different team members in different positions. And I love the puzzle of a human being. I think it's why I you know, no matter what I do in my career, and now I do a lot more speaking than I do coaching, but I'm always going to be a coach. I just feel like it's in my DNA, and I'm so glad I found this profession. Is that I love the puzzle of a human being. And I really think a lot of us are living life with a blueprint that is outdated, that was given to us by somebody else. A lot of us, it's our parents. We're living off a blueprint that was, you know, we watched growing up. And I think what happens along the way is we either continue that blueprint And it leads us down a path of like, hey, maybe this isn't what I want. Or at some point we have this realization of, wait a minute, I'm following the same blueprint that my mom and dad lived life on. And guess what? It served them at the time. But if I want a life that looks slightly different, or if I want maybe something more, or I want to, you know, neither of my parents were entrepreneurs. And I realized pretty early on of like, I have way too much ADD, or I can't do the same thing every day. Like I will lose my mind.
Yeah.
I need to have like more opportunity to be creative and play and do these things. So I started to realize, hold on a second, I need to redefine success for myself also, because it's just so easy to get caught up on the next thing, the next thing, the next thing, or look left and be like, oh, well, they have this, or look at my neighbor and they have this. And it's just easy to just kind of get caught up chasing these things. And my whole mantra around this is, it is going to take a lot of time, a lot of energy, and a lot of sacrifice to chase down something. You better make sure it's something that you want, because it's going to take just as much time and energy to go get it. And I just, you know, I would hate, and I think a lot of people are on that path, if they really think about like, hey, this is what I'm in pursuit of, but why? Answer the why. What, why? And it's easy to be like, well, just more money, we're more status, more this. But if you can get really clear on what you're going after, I think that's where, like, when we talk about like what's important, starts to become a little bit more clear. And most people say their health, their family, and maybe their business. And then I look at their calendar and guess what I see? I only see business. I only see business things scheduled. Yeah. So it's an important realization that we got to define our own success.
You know, you're absolutely right. It's hard to sometimes say, hey, where is success lying? And in our mind, we're still chasing that, chasing that surface level success. Maybe a better banking account, you know, might be like, oh my god, we have so many expenses, you gotta pay all of this stuff. So you keep chasing that one thing, which then it's the cost of ignoring the misalignment, right? So you're misaligned, you feel empty, because even though you're doing all this work, you're only doing work in one area of the life, as opposed to the three things that you've defined, right? And then you end up constantly chasing that one thing, hoping that's going to fill in these other buckets, but that's not the case.
A lot of times we think that one bucket, we can overflow one bucket and that it will start to fill the others, and it doesn't work that way. There are so many people who are trying to make as much money as possible to make up the fact that they don't have exciting or healthy relationships in their life. There's a lot of people who are trying to out earn the fact that they don't have a healthy body or feel confident in their own skin. And what happens is, like, you can't out earn that. There's no amount of money in the world that is going to make you happy when you look in the mirror, right? Like that's an inner job. That's something that we have to work on. And it's the same thing that happens in relationships as well. So we need to be clear on what we're doing and why we're doing it, what we're in pursuit of, why we're in pursuit of it. And it's not easy. It's like, for most people, they think they can just rattle off what success means to them or what it looks like. But I really challenge them, like, put pen to paper, sit with it for a little bit, go for a really long walk and get super detailed about what success looks like for you. And whether that's right now, whether that's a year down the road, whether that's 5 years down the road, get clear on what it looks like. And I think a lot of people might realize that either they're in pursuit of something that they don't really want, or maybe they're more successful than they're giving themselves credit for.
Amen. Amen, bro. Brett, talk to me about the environment and the community in building the confidence, as well as having the realization that you are successful, because I think environment is the number one thing that's going to create actions in your life that's going to say, hey, you are in a successful place. You are among people that care about you. Talk to me about this.
Yeah, nothing will impact us more than our environments. And, you know, we can go down the path of like the intimate relationship, but like nobody has more of an influence over your life than your intimate partner, right? They're the second in the line as far as the influence that they'll have over you. But a lot of people will try to change their habits so that they can then find the new environment or put themselves in a new environment. And I actually think you can speed up the process by doing it in the reverse order. I always encourage people, get around the environment and let the environment start to chip away at your new habits. Because if you're around, and you know, fitness is a great example for this, but if you're somebody who's always struggled with fitness, well, if you start going to a, you know, 7 a.m. workout, guess what you're starting to do? You're starting to live and act and wake up in the morning and have morning routines that are similar to fit people who wake up at 7 and work out at 7 in the morning. So what happens is before you know it, you're starting to act like them. You're starting to walk like them. You're starting to do other things that they do. Yeah. You now have an evening routine that allows you to get to bed so you can get to the 7 a.m. workout. To me, your environment is such a key piece in this. And I would actually want people to use it even more. Leverage your environment to change you. And one of my favorite lines is put yourself in environments where their norm is your desired goal. So if you want to get fit, surround yourself, put yourself, where do the fit people hang out? What are they doing? Where are they spending their time? If you want to drink less, put your, you know, self in environments where alcohol is not the main focus, where alcohol is not the main priority of that event or that dinner or whatever. That's what you got to do. You leverage your environment. And then the second piece of that is everybody says, surround yourself with like-minded people. Yes, but there's a catch 22 to that because like-minded people don't necessarily want to hang out with you if you're not like them.
Exactly.
So there is a buy-in to that. There is a buy-in to get into the environment. And I always say, instead of trying to, you know, just find the environment, become the environment. You want to hang out with people who have great energy? Guess what you got to bring to the table? You got to bring some good energy. You want to hang out with people who, you know, maybe you're not the fittest person in your circle, but you want to start hanging out with them. Well, guess what? You know, set up some fitness activities, you know, meet people for a hike instead of maybe at the bar. Like those are the type of changes you can make in your life where you start to adapt and become the type of person that you want to.
You know, those are so powerful. The environments, the communities are the ones that are going to help us get to that level. I became a beekeeper, not just by wishing and watching YouTube videos. No, I had to go join a local beekeepers association. I surrounded myself with other beekeepers. And then 8 weeks later, guess who I was? I was a beekeeper buying bee gear and buying bee, you know, getting bees delivered to his home. And that made me a beekeeper. I didn't just pray to become a cyclist. I had to go join cycling groups and ride with them and, you know, level up my comfort on that bike. Like even now I can stick around with other cyclists in my team, but pretty soon I'm dropped off because I need to work harder on myself, but at least I'm going out there and surrounding myself with that environment.
Janae, that's such a great example. And I love that you said that because I actually just got into cycling myself a little bit. Nice. And here I am, you know, I'm looking at my communities and I'm online on Instagram and I'm like, man, none of my friends are cyclists. Like I don't have any cyclists in my community.
Yeah, yeah.
But here's the thing. Then all it took was me putting up one video of me in the spandex and the helmet and the bikes sharing that I don't even have clip-in shoes. Like I don't have anything. I am such a beginner.
Yeah.
And guess what happened? All of the people that are actually cyclists started messaging me and giving me help and giving me advice and saying, hey, don't worry, do this or try this. And what happened was I didn't realize that there were all these cyclists out there because they didn't believe that I was a cyclist. So if I didn't show that I was one of the, you know, the group or whatever, why would they be sharing in, you know, cycling information with me? They have no reason to. Yeah. But as soon as you start to identify with that group will start to identify itself back to you.
Oh my God, that's so powerful because just 2 years ago, my cyclist group also has other hobbies. Like they love Lego, right? So they put me in a messaging group with other Lego groupies. And guess what? I've got a friend of mine sent me this Lego set that's me in my studio.
I love that, man. Look how cool that is.
So my kid actually elevated. I added a bookshelf. Like we are a Lego family and we're always building stuff. So you're absolutely right. You know, when you show up with what you are passionate about, you're going to have people coming from left to right. Like, I'm into this too. I'm into this too. And they'll start talking and they'll sharing a story. Brett, I would love to hear a bit about what inspired you to write your book and why now?
That's a great question, Janaid. And there was I'll start with the why now. The why now was I had always loved, you know, when I was first starting my own business, when I was first starting to work for myself, I traded Friday nights at the bar for Friday nights in the library. And I went to the Arlington Public Library in Virginia, and every Friday night I would go there and I would work on my business. I would work on my brand. I would work on social media, and I would work on my coaching programs, and I would be taking courses. And it was just, it was my Friday night dedication to, I want to change my life.
Yeah.
And I would always look around and I would look at all of the books in that library. And it was super inspiring because every single one of those people had a dream. Every single one of those authors had a dream, felt like they had the confidence enough to like, hey, I'm worthy of putting my, you know, words in a book and putting my name on it. And let me tell you, man, there's a book on everything. Walk around the library, man. There's a book on hammers. There's a book on like, you know, different types of paper.
Yeah.
There's a book, like there is literally a book on everything. So if you're ever doubting, you don't have enough thing, you know, nothing to say, go to the library, look at some of the actual titles.
Love that.
Why now is I was sitting around with a buddy and we were having like, you know, deep, you know, fireside conversation. And he threw out a question and he said, if you knew you only had 1 year to live, would you have any regrets? And I remember thinking personally and saying, you know, I'm pretty proud of the way I've lived. And, you know, I haven't been perfect, but I feel like I've tried to be a good friend. I've tried to be a good son. I've tried to be a good brother, you know, uncle, all those things. And I'm proud of the way that I've showed up in my personal life. But professionally, this one thing came right to the surface, and it was, yeah, I think I would regret that I didn't write a book, not only for maybe a legacy reason, but I just felt like I had lived enough life and I had some great stories. And I was really, I always felt like a superpower of mine that turned into a skill was I had the ability to motivate and inspire and encourage people to play a little bigger, right? To just to believe in themselves a little bit more. And it was that conversation that led me, you know, that next month I researched publishing companies and I researched, you know, writing coaches, and I went full in. And a month later, here I was starting the process of writing the book. And it took a full 2 years from that process to starting to having it finished and completed last September. It's wild. It's crazy how like that question, why I love that question, and I may love to give that to your audience as well, is it really starts to highlight the thing that maybe we should be prioritizing more. Mm-hmm. If you had 1 year left to live, would be there anything that you regret that you hadn't done yet? And it may not even be business. Maybe it's a trip that you haven't taken. Maybe it's somebody you haven't seen in a while. Is there anything that you would regret if you knew you had 1 year left to live? I just think it's such a great filter and litmus test for what is the thing that we've been pushing off that we would be really upset if we never got to that. Maybe for somebody else, it is go live by the ocean, like we talked about in our last episode. Like maybe you've just been saying you want to do that forever. Like, what are we waiting for?
Yeah.
So I love that. I love that pressure that it puts on that answer. And I think it really will highlight maybe what somebody should be pursuing that maybe they're not currently.
Brett, that's such a powerful story because like you said, you know, you never know how long we have left. And if you know exactly, hey, 1 year from now, I'm no longer going to be here, you start to change all of the priorities in your mind. At the Empowered Podcasting Conference that I was in, one of the last talks was by David Firth, and his topic was, what are you waiting for? And I'm like, holy smokes. And he tells a story. A few years ago, he was at this event, and he knew he was going to perform, and then this lady walks in. She's like, hey, do you know how to play the piano? And he's like, yeah, I do. And she's got the guitar. So they sang, they performed together. She had this amazing voice. And he's like, oh my God, that's amazing. And they, you know, jammed together. And then later on, he was like, hey, do you want to, you know, work together on a song later on? And she's like, absolutely, let's do it. Here's my number. He waited a good maybe 3 months to give her a call. Because he's like, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I'm working on this. I'm working on this. This is, what if this? What if this goes wrong? He calls and her friend picks up. And she's like, I'm so sorry, but she passed away. She's no longer here. And a year, like a few minutes later, or maybe actually almost a year later, there was a dedication album that they were doing on her. And I'm like, oh my God, what was I waiting for? I could have just, you know, make that happen. So thank you for sharing that beautiful example of, you know, what if you have a year left? What are you going to focus on? What are you going to not have done? Because we're like, oh, we have tomorrow. We have tomorrow. But we don't know if it's there, if it's guaranteed for us.
Yeah, nothing is guaranteed. We all like to think that we have a lot of time. And I really hope we do, right? I hope we all have a lot of time.
Yeah.
But there's two things that can really help with that is starting to live a little bit more with urgency. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what changed. Something happened in my early 30s, my late 20s, early 30s, where I just started to play the urgency game a little bit. It's easy to be like, oh, I'm only 27. Oh, now I'm only 29. Now I'm only 31. But what happens is when I started to live with a little bit more urgency and put a little bit of, hey, I don't know how long I have. I don't know when I'm going to find my future wife. I don't know when I'm going to have kids and now not be able to have the freedom to maybe make that choice. And maybe now there's more people that are relying on me and I don't have just, you know, the ability to do whatever Brett wants, whenever Brett wants. That all of a sudden started to really increase the momentum of my life when I started to live in kind of these 90-day increments. And I've always loved, I do the same thing with clients. I do the same thing with companies. It's like, hey, we're going to focus on 90 days. Like, because 90 days is so realistic. And also it makes every day urgent. That's my favorite part of it. If you say, you know, Brett, we're going to circle back and we're going to do something together in a year. I'm like, okay, remind me in 9 months, you know, like remind me in 10 months. And then like, I'll remember that thing.
Yeah.
But if you say like, hey, we're going to do this, we're going to run this race in 90 days. It's like, hey, today, training today matters. Showing up today matters. If I want to launch this new thing in 90 days or run a live event, 90 days, every day matters. But it also does. Love 90 days because it's realistic. We might have some travel. We might have a holiday. We might have a birthday. We might have some sort of event going on. We might get sick in 90 days. Mm-hmm. Like we have to, it's a realistic snapshot of what life's going to look like. So I just love the 90 day increments. Cause for me, I do have long-term goals, but if I can't break that goal into some sort of 90 day piece, I normally just, I'm like, okay, I'll remind myself that later, but I live in 90 day increments. I'm always in a 90 day sprint.
Brett, I love it. Thank you so much. This has been such an incredible 2-part series. I really appreciate you coming on and, you know, filling us up with hope and pressure and what's that word I was thinking? Hope and gratitude, because we are here, we are alive, and we can make things happen for us. And for anyone listening who feels stuck between comfort and purpose, what's your one piece of advice to get them moving today?
It would be to create urgency in your life. And it would be to, and I'll add this in there, is treat your life like it's important.
Yeah.
And somebody asked me, you know, this was a little while ago, and I forget what I did, but I had either come off stage or something, or I said something, and, you know, sit in a small circle, and somebody looked at me and they said, "You must think you're really important." And they said it almost kind of like side eye, like to try to get a reaction out of me. Sure. And I thought for a second, and I came back with probably the greatest comeback that I've never said before.
Oh yeah.
And I said, yeah, I do think I'm really important. Mm-hmm. Because whether you think that you're important or whether you think that you're insignificant, you're going to act accordingly.
Amen.
And everybody in the circle kind of just like looked at me and I was like, oh, wow, I think I just said something pretty, pretty incredible. I got to write that down.
Yeah.
But it was really just my thought. And I just have always felt like, hey, if you treat your life like it's important, you're going to think like you're important. You're going to act like you're important. And you're probably going to take the action of somebody that feels like they're here for a reason. So please, I hope everybody out there treats their life and acts like they are important, because they are.
Amen. Amen, Brett. Thank you so much for this conversation again. I really appreciate you, you know, giving us these powerful advice, these powerful tips that we can implement in our lives, and also for sharing your wisdom and your book with us. For all of you listening, if this conversation spoke to you, please check out Brett's book, Uncomfortable Either Way, at BrettEaton.com. The links will also be in the note. And you can also connect with him on Instagram, BrettEaton_. We'll have all the links in the show notes. Brett, what's the number one place that you like to connect with people?
I tend to hang out on Instagram. Okay. I just might be part of my generation. but yeah, I mean, all my information is on my website, but Instagram is where I'm pretty active. Also on YouTube and a couple of places, pretty much Brett Eaton everywhere. So you search me, you'll probably find me, and let's hang out. And if you hear this and you enjoyed it, definitely let me know what one of your takeaways were. I always love that.
Awesome. Well, Brett, thank you so much again for this conversation, and we'll catch you in the next one, man.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you having me on. This was great.
You betcha. Guys, remember, growth isn't supposed to be easy. Have you ever seen the plants pop out of the ground? I'm sure it's not hard, not easy for them to get out of that hard surface, because it's supposed to be meaningful. Thanks again for tuning into Hacks and Hobbies. Make sure that you're subscribed so you keep continuing to catch these amazing episodes with our guests as we roll these things together. All right, until next time, keep curious and keep creating.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode on Hacks and Hobbies. We absolutely appreciate your contribution. You can find additional notes on hacksandhobbies.com. Please share the podcast with your friends and tell them what you learned about our guest today.